Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today we have on with us Paul Nielsen, who is the founder of Tejon Technologies. He's going to tell us what that is in a couple minutes. But also he's the author of 8 technical books, the better known, the ones that you might all know and have picked up, Microsoft SQL Server 2008 Bible. Now, we heard SQL Server. We know where we're going with this conversation. Very technical, right?
We love the weeds.
We love the weeds. We'll try and explain it, though, as we go. But welcome today, Paul. How are you doing?
Doing good.
Doing good?
Thanks for inviting me here.
Sure, definitely. So we want to know, we're going to talk about SQL Server and cybersecurity. And if you're not familiar out there with what SQL Server is, it is the database behind all of our systems that stores just rows and rows and rows of tables, records, that usually is a separate machine that our websites or our applications query and go get list of information to then display to us as users. And you can give us a better definition later.
Okay.
But Paul, give us your background. Tell us how you got to where you're at and about, you know, all this, wow, technical writing in this book. I have the copy in front of me, and it is definitely a Bible.
Okay. Even as a teenager, I really liked the logic. I liked computers. I was a teenager in the days of the Z80 computer, CPM, you know, pre-Apple II. I joined the Navy as a data systems tech, submarines, when I got out of the Navy. In the subs, that was service. That was great because I was one of the last classes that actually got to work on the Yuck 7 computer, which had core memory and no IC chips. So the CPU was a large drawer with 200 cards and transistors. And we got to learn how to troubleshoot that down to a fried transistor. So it was a great foundation. I got into consulting, found myself surrounded by guys who love to do the front end work, and I love the database, so I just got further and further deeper into databases. That led writing some reviews, writing for Ziff Davis, PC Week Labs, a lot of magazine reviews. That led to a book, that led to more books, that led to becoming a Microsoft MVP, and doing a lot of conference speaking. I did my own seminar called Smart Database Design and taught that all over Europe and UK and Canada and US, and had a blast doing that. And for the last several years, I've been working on Tejon Tech, which is my own startup building our own database.
Yeah, what is it that you do there?
When you're doing a relational database, which is, and SQL Server and MySQL and Oracle are all relational, traditional databases, you have to have someone come in and analyze everything you want to track, build tables for it, stored procedures for it, build reports and forms and everything from the ground up. It's a 6 to 12 month process. So what we do is you have a configuration studio where you can say these are the things we're tracking and the fields and how they're connected and the rules, and it completely builds the database and the Windows front end for you instantly. So it saves that 6 to 12 months and turns it into, once you have the analysis done using our methodology, about 1 or 2 days to build the application.
Wow. So when you say Windows front end, that is a program that gives you ways to access the data.
Right, correct? For the end users, yes.
Okay. Just, you know, going through the technical pieces here. So as far as SQL Server, explain what a database is, a SQL Server, for people at the kind of a
Sure, it's a way level of organizing data. So that you have a table which looks sort of like a spreadsheet that has rows and columns, and you apply indexes to make it faster, and you connect the data together. So you would say, here's a spreadsheet of customers. Here's a spreadsheet of sales. Here's a spreadsheet of vendors. Those become tables with links between them inside of a relational database.
Okay. And SQL means structured query language.
Right. And some people say SQL. Some people say SQL. I tend to say SQL. Some people say SQL if they're feeling frustrated on that given day. The big thing that's different about a database server versus sort of a desktop database is that instead of, like if you're using Microsoft Access or FilePro or one of those desktop databases, then the database file is opened from the file server. It goes, the whole file or parts of the file go across the network wire, and all the processing and work happens inside of the workstation, the client machine. If it's a database server, it's more of a very uptight reference librarian where you go there with a perfectly written query. That librarian does all the work for you and returns back with just the perfect answer. And that reference library or your data never leaves the server. So you have better security, better performance, better scalability. So that's the idea of a database server.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That is perfect. So we're going to take a break here and hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Here's something important that you'll want to put into your calendar. The annual Cyber Symposium, Wednesday, November 1st through Friday, November 3rd, 2017. Brought to you by the National Cybersecurity Center. The annual Cyber Symposium is where elected officials and decision makers get the latest information on the key cyber issues of today. It's where they become better equipped to take action on the cybersecurity issues for your state, your city, and your company. RSVP now at www.cybersymposium.org. That's www.cybersymposium.org. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
So welcome back. We are talking to Paul Nielsen, still here today, about servers and database security is where we're going. So we want to know what is, when we're talking about databases, which we just kind of described and had a good explanation of before the break, when we look at securing our data, so many people are, what do we do? How do we secure our data? Why are all these data breaches happening? Let's look at this from a perspective of the database. Talk to me about what is the problem, the solution for security.
Well, there's a number of problems. I'll walk through some of the big problems. Probably the biggest is when a programmer or network admin simply installs the database server software on their server, and they don't properly go through and set up security, they don't even lock it down. MongoDB is another real popular database right now. And I recently read something where they did a quick analysis and there were 100,000 production MongoDB servers that had no password for the system administrator.
Because so that's just top-level access, and when you install it, it defaults to zero password, just blank, hit enter, and you're in.
Right.
And people are leaving it that way.
Yes. And this used to be a problem for SQL Server, Microsoft's product. And several versions back, they made it so when you install it, they force you to put in a strong password. Mm-hmm. But just not locking it down, even cases where the application that connects to the database is written in a way that every user, therefore, has full system access permissions, that kind of stuff. So the first problem is just, not even turning on security is a common problem.
So when we go to we hear this continuously, where we're just like passwords, people right. forgetting to do whatever. It's literally, that's the biggest problem in database security is, even though these people have all the data yes. for whole companies, they figure it's on the back. I mean, what's the thought process there? It's on the back end. Nobody's getting to it. I'm hiding behind something else.
Well, I think the biggest problem is it's a regular programmer, a regular front-end JavaScript or C# or something programmer who is not a trained DBA, database administrator, who does not, their mindset is not on data security, so they just install it and put as little work into it as possible. I think that's the source of the problem. So that's probably the biggest problem, number one. Problem number two would be something called SQL injection. And I have to explain a little bit about what that is. So let's say you go to a website.
And this is an attack that people are doing to get data yes, from a database
right.
or some kind of access from a database remotely by sending commands into it.
Correct. There's a real famous XCD, or that one cartoon that's the techies love. But if you just search for SQL injection little Bobby tables, you will see this cartoon that is infinitely famous in the database world. So what SQL injection basically is, if you go to a website and you're typing in your name or something to search for it, and at the end of that, you put, say, a semicolon and then a SQL command, like select star from customer or delete customer, delete table customer, something like that, then if the program just takes whatever you type it in, adds that into the where clause of the SQL statement and sends that to the SQL server, SQL server will think that's a batch of multiple commands and just execute what you typed in. So
people are sending commands to do stuff to the data along with their request for their individual data item.
Yes.
They're just putting it at the mm-hmm. end of their, you put your name, it says, return your credit card information, you put your last name in there. At the end of your last name, you put a SQL command that then goes and executes in the database.
Yes. And it's not hard to sanitize the, what has been being sent to the SQL server or its SQL server to accept it, use it as a parameter within a query so that it doesn't become a separate command. It's not hard at all to protect against it once that's your mindset and you're doing careful programming. But that's a very common problem of people who just do the bare minimum and SQL injection comes in.
So people don't have to try to hack into the server machine. They're going in through interfaces
through the website
that developers have left
yep.
unchecked, basically. We'll put it that way. Exactly. They didn't do it on purpose. They just didn't check fully to make sure that this couldn't happen, and voila.
Mm-hmm. Another common problem is not encrypting the data soon enough. And I'm sure Yes. I'm sure you've talked about encryption and that kind of stuff in your podcast. I'm sure there's a history. That's a huge, huge topic. Well, if the data is, let's say you're checking out at some big box store. You swipe your credit card.
Mm-hmm.
That credit card reader is actually a device connected to a Windows machine that's doing the point of sale.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not encrypted right away, a virus on that point of sale Windows machine can capture everything being passed. So even if they handled all of the PCI compliance requirements for handling credit cards, which up until recently only included the data center, maybe you encrypt everything at the data center and this data center is all locked down, but the point of sale device doesn't encrypt it right away. Mm-hmm. So it gets captured either at the point of sale device, and a lot of the data breaches that you've read about, that's how they did it, is somebody got a virus into one of the point of sale devices, it spread to all the point of sale devices, and they just sat there and captured all the credit cards as you were swiping your credit card before it ever went to the secure data center.
So it never got to the database they captured it before.
Right.
But then they had to do one at a time, right? It wasn't like going reading a whole table full of them.
Correct. But if the virus is sitting there on thousands of point-of-sale devices,
point taken. Over,
and it's not not discovered for 6 months, you uh-huh. have several million. Yep.
Yeah. So You hear so often encryption, encryption, encryption. People start to think security and encryption are synonymous and the same thing.
I would say encryption is one small component of security. Security starts, and I'm sure you've talked about concentric levels of security, rings of security. That's a common phrase, I'm sure. And I'm a database guy, not a security guy, although I talk about database security and I've written about database security and things like that. So I know from my company, we've documented, carefully figured out our rings of concentric security. Mm-hmm. Can I mention where we host our data?
I don't see why not.
Okay. Well, we're here in Colorado Springs, and right in downtown Colorado Springs, there's a great data center called Data 102. Mm-hmm. And you should have them on if you haven't yet. Great people. Very helpful, very
smart
engineers.
You'll have to introduce me. We'll make the connection. I'd love to have them on.
So, you know, that is a secure data center. No one can enter the physical data center unless they sign in, they go through the security man traps, you know, you give them your driver's license. You know, it's a full secure data center. So physical security is the first sort of ring of security. Then you got to make sure your network is secure. You have the right firewalls in place. I feel relatively competent to set up a firewall, but I have a security guy who specializes in, you know, he has more certifications in security than I even know what they mean. So he's definitely a guru, and he reviews our firewalls and helps us set that up. Mm-hmm. So making sure your network is secure, making sure that the servers are properly patched and secure, as far as Windows Server. Mm-hmm. And then in the database server, there's layers of security inside the database as far as who can log in. And then logins have permissions to different sets of data internally. So we set ours up so that the application can only have permission to connect to the database and call a stored procedure, but it can't see the tables underneath. So we fully control what they can execute, even the application when it connects.
Okay. And
then we also encrypt sort of on the fly, on the wire. Mm-hmm. From the application to the server, and we also encrypt what's called at rest, or you know, when it's on the disk. Mm-hmm. And in the database world, just as a funny thing, we talk about SSDs is what we want to have, not those old spinning frisbees of rust. They're bad. We don't want them anymore. Yeah.
Well, okay, let me take a break here for our sponsors, and we'll come back in a couple minutes.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
All right, welcome back. And we're talking to Paul Nielsen today about security on databases, which is something that gets very technical, but Paul's trying to bring it up to that level where we can all kind of catch our breath and understand. So we were talking about concentric, you know, all the different rings of security before
right.
the break. So what if we're talking to somebody who just says, you know I need something on my data security. Mm-hmm. Tell us, what do we look for? We're just, you know, we don't want to be experts in SQL or not the, you know, a lot of the people that are looking, just they want to secure their data. What do we need to know at that level?
Okay, and so I'm assuming this person is a web programmer. There's a
I would
database.
Say it's a business owner that wants to think about, what do I need to know about my data?
Mm. It's probably pretty technical for a business owner to jump into.
Okay,
yeah.
So maybe they want to know who they involve.
Okay. Well, a couple of resources I'll mention first off. There is another Microsoft MVP. His name is Denny Cherry. He's written a book on SQL security, SQL Server security, that is, I think, the best one. There's, I think, five or six books out there on security right now. Because there's so many myths about security, and I've at least skimmed all of them and read a couple of them in detail, and some of them actually give the opposite advice of what I would say, or what Microsoft would say, is the right way to secure.
And what is that?
As far as the a common advice would just be, you know, take some of the defaults, some of those kinds of things. For example, SQL Server listens on a particular IP port. So if you have an IP address out there, and everybody who's on the internet has an IP address, IP addresses actually have 65,000 or so ports they can listen to. It's a specific number they're listening to. SQL Server has a default port, 1433. And that's the standard port. So you can change that to an abnormal port if you want to, a non-standard port. When we've had databases that are fully secured but on the internet, and we use the standard port, we have seen upwards of around 6,000 to 10,000 failed logins or hack attacks a day. The record that we saw was 60,000 attacks within 2 minutes. And then we can see SQL Server logs the IP address and the user account they try to log into. So these are just bots around the world, a lot of them from Russia or from West Africa. And they just sit there and they go through all the IP addresses, scan the ports. If they see something active on 1433, they'll hammer a little bit with some standard, you know, SA, no password, SA, simple password. They'll hammer it and try to get into it. So it's a good idea to not be on that standard port and just, you know, I know security by obscurity is not great security, but the Navy SEALs don't wear Dayglo orange when they sneak in someplace, right? So
that's a good analogy.
Don't wear Dayglo orange and just say, hi, every bot in the world, come ping me. So
some kind of any way you can make your data access unique, that it's not just everybody knows to try every company, every IP address, looking for this open port to know that there's a SQL database on there.
Right. And if you can, put your port behind the firewall, put the SQL Server behind the firewall, and have another device in between there. So you would, from the outside in, you would have the wild internet. You would have an outside firewall that just lets maybe the standard port in. You have some kind of software you've written that listens and passes it on to your, you know, in that DMZ portion. Then you have an inside firewall that only lets that one box on a non-standard port go through and talk to your server. That's probably the best way of configuring from the internet to your SQL Server.
Okay.
If you have a direct connection, you know, some application out there is connecting in. If it's a website that you're hosting, then you definitely want to make sure you have an outside firewall, your website application server, then an inside firewall, and then SQL Server back behind there, so that you have that separation. Yep.
Okay. So now, well, I mean, it sounds like everything we get into, we get really technical. If I don't want to, I'm a business owner and I want to know, you know, I just want to reach out to somebody and have somebody do this for me. Give me a way to say, hey, here's the type of expert I'm looking
for. Okay. You would definitely want to find somebody who has some depth in the specific database you're using. So I'm a Microsoft MVP or post MVP person. I'm more in the startup world now, not the SQL Server world as much. I don't speak in the SQL Server world as much, but you want to find somebody who has deep knowledge in the specific database server you're using, whether it's MySQL or Oracle or Mongo or Microsoft SQL Server, because it's, once you get into that engine level for security, it's very different from product to product to product.
Yeah. So would I pick one of those databases, or would, you know, so if I'm at the point where I haven't picked a database yet, is one of them more secure than the other? Would you pick one over another?
I would say that the enterprise databases, and those would be Oracle or Microsoft SQL Server, would be more secure than the open source, you know, NoSQL, which is sort of a style of databases.
That's the MySQL, the Mongo, is that?
MySQL is still, I would call it a relational database.
Okay.
But Mongo, Neo4j, a number of these are NoSQL databases. And NoSQL databases mean when you design your code inside, it's less structure, faster and flexible to work with, has some new cool features. So programmers like working with NoSQL databases, but database administrators like working with the more structured enterprise databases.
Okay. So, but developers are using them because because
you have to store your data somewhere.
Well, I mean, the new NoSQL databases.
Oh, okay.
Because they're easier to start up and work on quickly and everything.
Right.
So there's that trade-off and say, hey, it's easy to use versus security. Is that pretty much the standard in databases?
Yeah, the security doesn't become the biggest difference. It's how much structure you have. Mm-hmm. Going back to that analogy at the very beginning, where if you have a spreadsheets and you say, here's a customer and here's an order and here's a vendor, different spreadsheets, there's links between those. Some of those links might not be 100% enforced in a NoSQL database, whereas a well-designed relational database, they're very strictly enforced. So you have to do everything in the exact right order for your programming, or it's going to complain to you. Mm-hmm. Think of it this way. Banks are a good example for this kind of structure. So if you wanted to say, I'm taking money out of one account and moving it to my second account, say $1 million, because we do that all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually going to be two commands. One is going to be an update or delete command from the first account, and an insert or an update command to the second account to move money from and to. So you want to make sure that both of those transactions happen, or if something goes wrong, neither of those transactions happen. You never want one to happen but not the other. And that kind of forced structure.
Well, as long as you have the deposit first before the withdrawal.
Well, yeah, there's always that instance, yes. But the NoSQL databases are not as careful with that level of extreme locking and structure as the more enterprise databases are. And I guess that sort of blends a little bit with security. You got to make sure your data is there. But the thought is, NoSQL databases aren't used for banking. And if somebody enters their tweet and it gets lost, they're just going to enter it again. The world doesn't stop. You know.
So it's the criticality of the data we're really talking about.
Exactly. There. How critical is it? That's a perfect analogy. Perfect,
yeah.
Perfect reason.
Okay. So if I'm a student and we get, you know, I have a lot of students and how do they know they want to be going down the direction of working with databases? What types of skill sets would they be good at, interested in?
I would say that most database designers and administrators don't start out as database designers and administrators. They start out as programmers. And after a few years of programming, whether it's Windows client or web programming, they just find they have a real knack for picturing in their mind how the data could be segmented and organized and optimized, and they're drawn toward that as a career. So if you go to the conferences, the database conferences, the average person there is over 40.
It's a career you work into later in...
Yes.
Or a job you work into later in your career. Cybersecurity is a lot of that way too. I mean, we're getting a lot of people interested in now going to school. Younger people say, I want to get into cyber.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen it traditionally be, you know, the people that have gone and learned all the different aspects of business and how the controls work.
Sure.
And then finally work in that direction of cyber.
Yeah, well, in the database world, you have to be able to go deep in a pretty complex area.
Mm-hmm.
And in cyber, it's the same thing. And you have to know, you have to be able to go very deep in a number of different technologies to be good at cybersecurity. You can't just do one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So kind of as we start wrapping up here, tell us how to get a hold of you, who you might reach out to, what type of clients you're looking for, and what this startup you have going on. It looks very exciting.
Yeah. So it's Tejon Tech. Tejon is T-E-J-O-N, like T. John, if you're not from Colorado Springs. But Tejon is the main street here in Colorado Springs, and we work on down in Tejon Tech.
So it's Main Street Tech is what you're doing, right?
Sort of, yeah.
Gotcha.
We don't have that domain or trademark, but yeah. So you know, we work on Tejon down at Epicentral, which is a cool co-working place.
Okay.
Our favorite place to eat is Poor Richard's. We go to Acacia Park. Our data is hosted at Data 102, which is on Tejon, and it just made sense that you know we're a database for Main Street, so that's why we called it Tejon Tech, and we could get the trademark.
Yeah,
which is always a
that's
a
awesome.
So a real exciting thing just happened for us last week. There's this competition called Get in the Ring, and it's huge internationally.
Mm-hmm.
All over Asia, Africa, South America, Europe. It's very big in Europe. So internationally, it's much bigger than Shark Tank.
Mm-hmm.
And Get in the Ring, two startups get into a boxing ring and they answer questions with only 30 seconds to answer the question. And then the whole audience votes for who won. And so...
So is it more about the solution or more about your wit and your business pitch?
Yes.
Both?
Exactly. Yep. So my BizDev co-founder, Sam Elliott, did the pitch because I'm a product guy. I can't say anything in only 30
I know
seconds.
Sam pretty well.
Yeah. He's a really, really sharp guy. So we get in the ring. It was at UCCS last Wednesday night.
Uh-huh.
We won, which is super exciting. We will be the only company representing the U.S., going to Singapore. We leave Sunday for the global finals for Get in the Ring.
Oh, congratulations.
And
so what is the outcome of that? I mean, what do you need anything for any help, any support? Do you need us to tune into something and watch it?
Well, I think they're going to put stuff up on YouTube. Uh-huh. There's over 150 companies competing in the final from 10,000 companies that originally tried to compete.
Mm-hmm.
So... we don't know if we'll be in the finals that will be videotaped for YouTube and stuff, but it's going to be exciting. Just watch our website, Tejon Tech. We'll be posting and blogging about what we do and posting pictures and videos if we get them, and it's just a thrill. Our database is designed so that just business analysts or managers, anybody once who learns something about the concepts and methodology can really just use our graphical tool to say, this is what we're tracking, and it builds the database for you. So you don't have to have someone do that, all the structure for an enterprise database. And then it is fully secured, and we host it and all that kind of stuff. So,
well, I definitely might even check into that with some of the startups that I work with and recommend, mm-hmm. and see how they can use that. Because I know one of the things that is always a challenge is, well, now we have to design this database. Did we miss something? But they know their business logic, so
right.
That's a good approach. I definitely
and we love working with other startups, so
yeah.
That would be a good thing.
All right.
So it's TejonTech.com, and I'm Paul Nielsen, and we love working with data.
Well, thanks for joining today, Paul.
Thanks.
It's definitely been a pleasure. Have a good one.
Here's something important that you'll want to put into your calendar. The annual Cyber Symposium, Wednesday, November 1st through Friday, November 3rd, 2017. Brought to you by the National Cybersecurity Center. The annual Cyber Symposium is where elected officials and decision makers get the latest information on the key cyber issues of today. It's where they become better equipped to take action on the cybersecurity issues for your state, your city, and your company. RSVP now at www.cybersymposium.org. That's www.cybersymposium.org.
The views or opinions expressed by me during this podcast are my own and are not those of my employer, Colorado Technical University.
You have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.